I asked Louis, I said, in singles, what would your advice be to anyone? He said, get the point over as quickly as possible. Hard and fast, you know. And I think Freddie said the same, really. It is more mini tennis, I would have thought, singles, isn't it?
I just can't ever compare pickleball like to mini tennis. I don't see it like as a comparison, but I do understand what you're trying to say, where, you know, because it's such a short space of time.
Yeah, the rallies are much shorter in singles, aren't they?
Yeah, you have to be very tactical.
Return smash, and you know, you don't often get many rallies, do you? Not long rallies.
I mean, they come and go. Like if you watch the pros, there can be, you know, some long rallies. You know, because they're great athletes, they're around the court.
Well, they can cover the court, isn't it? That's the thing, isn't it? Yeah, I suppose you are. So that's the other thing as well. So are you keen on nutrition?
I mean,
it's all part, isn't it?
It never goes away, really.
The psychology, if you don't put the right fuel in, you don't matter how you train someone. If you haven't got the right fuel, your brain's not going to work properly, is it?
Yeah, exactly. It's completely, all of the professional training, it's just ingrained in me now. It never goes away.
And do you include that in your coaching when you're teaching people, sort of say, you know, if you want to get better, it's not just about being focused on the game, mental preparation, physically in shape, looking after yourself, stretching.
Yeah. So I have the performance psychology like coaching, so it's separate.
Yeah.
So when I do that, then yes, we talk about everything that goes into being an athlete. I'm working with a pickleballer at the moment in the UK. And yeah, we've talked about all those things. And the way that your mind transforms when you actually see yourself as a professional athlete, rather than, you know, person first, pickleball a second, you know, you actually switch that. And when you have a goal in mind, like to win or to win big, or, you know, you have big goals, big dreams, then you have to switch around that mindset. You have to be the professional athlete first in everything that you do, from, you know, waking up to going to sleep. And yes, people have jobs, but you're the athlete first. So, you know, you find things in your day that are going to benefit you. And if that's as simple as eating the right things, then you've ticked that off as, you know, a goal towards being an athlete.
Yeah, totally agree. Because I used to play a lot of rugby, and there's a top England coach, a guy called Peter Winterbottom, who's now the coach, director of rugby. And he was asked, these guys say they're semi-professional rugby players because they get paid their part money. And he goes, no, they're not semi-professional. They're amateurs who get paid. He said, there's a very big difference between being pro and a semi-pro, because it's your attitude towards how you train and focus and all that, that's being professional, or even semi-professional, doing it half the time.
But exactly, that's what
you might be getting a bit of money, but he said, no, these are just good amateurs. He said, because if you were semi-professional, you wouldn't be playing for this team. You know? that was his focus. It sort of resonated with me a little bit, going, because if you want to be good at anything, isn't it, you have to have a professional approach to it. It doesn't, in life, isn't it? Things don't happen by chance, do they?
No.
I mean, I listen to some of these, like Johnny Wilkinson, you know, fantastic goal kicker, and people say, oh, he's lucky. He said, no, you know, I practiced, I don't come off the practice ground until I get 10 out of 10, 100%. And then you create your own luck, if people want to call it luck. You know, if you're drilling 100 drives down the line, you know, this is what Thaddeus said to us when we kept coaching. She said, right, watched us, and then she asked us a very simple question. How many shots do you think you have in your rallies? 0 to 5, 5 to 10, and we all get 5 to 10. And she said, no, it's 0 to 5 if you actually watch. And then by the end of the evening, we were doing 10 to 15, 15 to 20. And she said, you must practice, because if you just play the games that watch down there, and these people were playing and there was like 4 shots and the point was over, how are you going to get better? If there's 4 of you on a court and there's only 5 shots, you might have only played 1 shot. Not going to improve you, because you don't practice that skill set, do you?
No. And it's also, so I would follow that up with, the most important thing is that when you go to practice, you practice with purpose. So purposeful dinking. So one of the first things that I will ask a player that I'm coaching, say we've done a drill, and they come away, the first thing that I ask them is, how much effort did you just put in? And if it's not 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, or 10 out of 10, then it's not valid. We can get rid of it, put it in the bin. It's not valid because you're not putting your whole self into that practice.
Yeah, so how's it going to get any better if you don't?
You can't measure your skill level. We can't measure what your ability might have been.
Yeah.
We can't measure your true ability and where you're at now unless you're putting 100% effort in. So that is the first question that I ask. And when you see pickleballers practice or play, sometimes, you know, when they get annoyed that they've missed a shot, straight away it will be about their technique or, you know, the shot choice or where they are on the court or, really bad, their partner, their partner's fault, right?
Yeah.
But I would love to see them ask themselves, how much effort did I really just put into making that ball in the court?
Yeah.
And if it's not 8 or 9 or 10 out of 10, okay, then that's what you need to correct first. That's what you look at first.
Every poor shot I make, I now have to challenge myself and say, could I have done, put a bit more effort in?
Yes, because...
It's funny you say that, because even last night, we're just, you know, rec play and you go, oh, it's a bit slow to that one. And actually, I only made a 5 out of 10 effort to get to the ball. One before, I made 8 out of 10 and I got it. And it's, so it is actually as simple as that. You know, it's like getting a bit tired. So you can't, and someone said, oh, you know, I know what I did wrong. I was slow and I didn't put the effort in. But why didn't I not put the effort in? Well, it's 9:30 and I'm tired. I've had a long day, so I'm not going to hurt myself, you know. But in a competitive environment, then you do need to be prepared. Is it prepare to fail?
Yeah, pretty much.
Poor performance. Is it piss poor planning prevents piss poor performance. Or pre-planning prevents piss poor performance. The 7 P's, isn't it?
Yeah.
All of those things.
Yeah. See, the thing is like, you can go and have fun. You know, if people are playing for fun, you go and have fun. You have a great time. If you're here for social reasons, you have a lovely social time. But if you say to me, you know, I wanted to win that point, or I want to win medals, I want to do the best I can. Okay, you trying your hardest?
Yeah.
That's the first question you ask yourself.
Yeah.
You know, there's no point getting annoyed at yourself, like you said, you know, for, oh, that was the wrong shot, or I should have done this, why did I do that? Did you try your hardest first? Mm. Did you really try your hardest? And, you know, that's kind of what I'm here to do in terms of like changing the mindset of pickleball in this country, because there's a big thing that I've seen, right? And my mindset is, if we want the sport to be seen as a professional sport, we have to treat it like one, which is why I opened the Performance Academy. You know, no matter whether you're a beginner or, you know, you are already playing in the English Open, I will coach you. And, you know, a lot of my players are there for social reasons. They are there to have fun, you know, and they take the coaching as it comes and they take it on and they're going to get better, but they don't necessarily want to play, you know, in the Open or whatever. That's fine. But the players that do and the players that want to go all the way, I don't put limits on them. And, you know, that's always the first question that I ask.
But I think that's a problem we have in this country at sport, at grassroots level. So I used to coach football, a long time ago, but Tesco's in collaboration with the FA did a thing where you get kids who go off to academies. There's that, but then there's thousands of other children out there who are very talented and don't get the opportunity. And they came to all our clubs and asked us as coaches and managers to identify in your team who are your elite players. And the philosophy was that they went back to the idea of why were we so good at football or Brazil or whatever, because they played street football. Kids just went out, kicked the ball. They weren't restricted. And that was the philosophy behind it. But then it was like, please identify who you think your elite players are, because what we have a habit of doing in this country is elevating people who are below average and try and bringing them up, and then people above you bring them down, because you sort of have a bar. And what happens is, when you're up here, you should be trying to push them up, and the people here should be trying to be pushed up, and those like that. And even at work, sometimes you get guys who are managers or trying to do somebody's job below them, or where, no, let that person below do it. You should be trying to do the job above you, and actually you keep pushing up the boundaries there.
Yeah.
And I think we have a habit of doing that in this country. But we seem to have this problem in the clubs now, because pickleball is great for lots of reasons. I could go on forever.
Yeah.
But once you become successful, you can be a victim of your own successes and stuff as a club. We have got a lovely club. 70, 80 people, waiting list of 60 or 70, don't have facility, don't have opportunity to bring all those people in. Some people don't want to be competitive.
Yeah.
You know, some people want to just have a social aspect. And so it's getting that balance, and then you're running like a beginner's session and, mm-hmm. and an intermediate session, an advanced session, and an elite advanced session, because everyone should be given the opportunity to play at their level or above their level if they want to get better, if they want, because you only ever get better by playing against better people, get good coaching.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest bit I think we have. I think our club are doing a brilliant job of doing it. But again, it's very much like none of us have a home. You know, we're in five or six different locations, so we don't all just turn up. So I don't know what, when you say an academy, in my head, I immediately think you have one facility where everybody turns up all the time, walking through the door, welcome to Spicy Pickleball. You know, there's five courts, it, you know, a bit like the idea of what's hopefully going to happen at the pop-up event where they're going to have those courts up there.
Yeah.
That you walk in and there's pickleball and you can play it whenever you want or whatever, but there's that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that's the bit, I don't know where... what's going to happen, because clubs are only as good as the people that run them. Volunteer, it's all volunteers. They don't get paid for doing it.
Yeah.
And I, that's just when it's, and I think Pickleball England do a brilliant, brilliant job. You might have a view on this governance issue. Don't really want to put people under pressure because I know it's a very sensitive subject at the moment. And I just wonder where, how we sort of bridge that gap is, you know, is pickleball, I'm excited by it because I think it's just going in one direction.
Yeah.
Or are we just in a honeymoon period, and then it might just sort of like, because it, all of these sports, if you don't underpin them, grassroots level, you've started this sport here, mm-hmm. present company excluded, with a fairly aging demographic, a lot of people who are 50 plus, 60 plus, they're not going to be around forever. In the nicest possible way, but we are living longer. Do you see where I'm going? Is that I hope that there is this pathway that's being set up, because I know in grassroots football, I've seen so many kids I thought had so much talent, but given the right guidance or given the right opportunities, could have been as good as Frank Lampard or someone like that, but didn't. They didn't get to the academy, but if they were given an opportunity and some of the late bloomers, you're not pigeonholed at an early age.
Yeah.
You know, you're maybe fortunate you loved your sport and you committed yourself. I mean, that's fair play to you for being so committed as a youngster. I mean, how did you avoid the distractions, actually? Was it, you, did you love the sport so much? Tennis?
I mean, yes, but I think when I put my mind to it, you know, I really go for something. As soon as I latch my mind onto something, nothing can get in my way. So a bit like from what you've seen over the last year with me in pickleball.
Yeah.
Once I latched my mind onto it, you know, I went 100% into it. And to go back to what you were just saying about, you know,
I was rambling a bit, sorry.
No. About giving, I completely understood what you're trying to say. And that's kind of why I'm here. It's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I do not put limits on players, no matter what age they are, no matter what level they are right now, no matter what ability they think they have, because it's always 10 times higher than they think it is, most of the time.
Is it that... You throw a number like that 10 times. I mean, is that you just being kind, or do you think?
No.
But how do you measure that when you say 10 times? You know, is it like if someone's can dink for four, after about a fifth time they might fail away, you actually, if you really wanted to, you could do 50 dinks without a problem?
To be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure. It just makes sense in my mind.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. Yeah, it just, that number just makes sense in my mind, to be honest. And it's just from what I see.
Yeah.
And that's literally what I'm here to do. I'm here to give players opportunities that they wouldn't necessarily get because they wouldn't push themselves to do it because they wouldn't have the belief in themselves.
Yeah.
So I have that belief for them. And all the players that come to my academy, you know, they will improve. Like every single week, they will improve, they will improve, they will improve. And not only will they improve, but they will also feel better about themselves, which means they will go and compete more. And that opens more opportunity for them. And then that means they will go on to win more. So So I give the opportunity to players of all ages, you know, from Ollie's who are 13 to Georgia and George who are in their 20s and then to players in their 30s, 40s, 50s. I teach, exactly, higher. I tell them all, stop putting limits on yourself. And it is something, you know, as humans that we like to do is we like to limit ourselves and we like to limit other people. And I've seen it, and it's huge in clubs, actually, from what you just said. I do understand the structure, you know, of having different groups, because even I have, you know, the beginners group and the next group and the like performance group. But it's very important to not limit players and to not give them a label and to say, you know, this is where you are and that's it. You know, you have to allow them to improve. You have to let them have a go, and you have to encourage them. You know, to, like you said, play with the better players, you know, encourage them to compete if that's what they want to do. You know, from when I came to your club, I think I told everyone at the end, guys, you need to get out there because you are so much better than you think you are.
Yeah.
You know, you can do so much more than you believed you could at the start of this session, you know.
But so that, most of that is not about the physical ability, isn't it? That's the mental approach. People mentally don't think they're good enough or don't want to. They fear failure. They fear.
That's why it's my number one thing.
Yeah, no, sport is about the mind, isn't it? It's not, I mean, you know, I'm just, it's rattling around in my head. Rory, do you follow golf?
No, not really.
So Rory McIlroy, number two in the world, you know, he hasn't won a major for 10 years. And on last Sunday in a major, he was two shots clear. He came back from four behind, two shots clear, two holes to go. All season, putts within 3 to 4 feet. He's done like 500 or 600 of them. He's never missed. He missed two. And no one can explain it. He's gone off. He's disappeared for 3 weeks. And everyone, he's had some stuff going on in his private life. But they all, and all the top commentators of sports and all the people talk about saying, it's just what's going on in his head. It can't be anything else because he has the ability. And why someone in that position who can do that 99 times out of 100 on those last two holes, He only needed to get one of the two in, and he missed both of them in different holes. And it's just like.
Do you want me to tell you why?
Yeah, go on.
So,
and you don't even follow the sport.
Going back to from what I said actually a little while ago, we all have a survival instinct inside of us. Now, I like to picture it as a little lion inside of us. Everyone has one, but it has a blindfold on. So we've always had the survival instinct, the fight or flight instinct. Yeah. We've always had it. It's what's kept us alive.
Yeah.
The only thing is...
Still keeps us alive.
Yes, exactly. The only thing is our lions have a blindfold on. It does not understand context. It does not see what you see. It does not know that we're in 2024. It does not know that we have what we have around us. It doesn't know that. All it knows is what you feel. So when you feel nerves or you feel excited or you feel anxious, the fight or flight kicks in. And the first thing that humans want to do is run. You know, when you're faced with fear, when you're faced with a lion, it tells you to run. Mm. You know, you don't want to face it.
Apparently you're not supposed to run if there's a lion, are you? Or is it a bear? You're supposed to keep still, but you know, your natural instinct is run.
But you want to run, right? As humans, we want to run away. Yeah. And when you get to that point and your survival instinct kicks in, so, you know, he's two away, right? He needs two. He's in that moment and he feels anxious and he feels nervous and his entire inner lion is telling him to run away. Now that is incredibly difficult to deal with because your lion is telling you you're in a life or death situation. It does not see that you're about to hit a golf ball. It thinks that you are faced with a lion in front of you. So what I teach in a lot of my sessions and what I teach my players is all about the survival instinct and how to stroke the lion like it's a puppy. You have to, you know, rewire those neurons so they're not telling you this is a life threat. And
the chimp.
Very similar to the chimp, yes. Yeah. And, you know, taming it.
Go on, have another beer, no. Or, you know, you're going to fail, you know, and you've got to tell the chimp to get back in its box, haven't you?
You have to tell it, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay and you can do this. And it sounds so simple, but it is one of the hardest things for us humans to do because it's a natural thing inside of us that we have. Yeah. And it keeps us alive.
Yeah.
So we're born with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going against the entire grain of our being. So it takes, you know, some intense mental skills training to, you know, rewire those thought habits.
If you want that, get in touch with Molly.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. I have already started helping pickleballers actually, and I've just started literally just now sold out actually a couple of workshops just by messaging a few players who I thought could benefit.
Yeah.
So I started doing these group workshops for mental skills, performance psychology.
Remotely or?
Yeah, so it's all online. That's right. The great thing about it. Because I have worked with athletes like all around the world because it's all online.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it's a little bit better if you've got, you know, that personal touch, but it can all be done online. Yeah, it's all online. So yeah, I can't wait to get started with that and see the pickleballers, you know, the difference that it makes in them. Because I definitely feel like there's a huge need for it.
Do you work with other psychologists? I mean, people like Stephen Peters, and have you sort of gone to any of their things and seen what they have to say and read?
I
assume things like anything, things evolve as well as scientists learn more about how the brain works, because it's far more powerful than any computer, isn't it?
Yes, I know other sports psychologists, performance psychology coaches, psychologists, and the thing is like everyone has their like thing that they latch onto, their like subject.
Yeah.
For me, you know, it's not the only one, but the main one is that survival instinct for me, because it changes everything, especially for an athlete. It's so important for athletes. So I've really latched onto that. And, you know, I've tried to learn everything there is to know about it. And every sports psychologist will have that thing that they latch onto.
But so if you're playing, say it's your livelihood now, you're playing, you know, to win is money.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's your livelihood because it doesn't, you know, you don't win and you don't win the purse, you know, you don't, mortgage doesn't get paid, and then you've got people banging on your doors, and then you've got other psychological issues that you've got to deal with.
Yes.
I mean, that must be, you know.
That's your survival instinct, right?
Yeah, again. You know, So in that moment, you know, a match point, you know, I've got to win this.
Exactly, yes. And it feels like life or death.
Mm.
And your body gets anxious and you get nervous and you have to win this point. You know, it's the same mentality. You have to come out of this alive.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing. And, you know, teaching someone the skills of how to stay calm and how to stay in the zone, how to stay focused and play the way you want to play. And it can be done because we've seen champions over and over again. And that's where they come from.
Well, I suppose as well, that's why you got some of these, I suppose the era of Federer, Djokovic, Nadal, Murray is not just, sports science as well and keeping their bodies in shape as well, but their mental strength and their probably as well while they're still at the top.
It's one of the reasons, genuinely, I think it's one of the reasons that I'm so good at what I do is because I have grown up around great coaches, that I have been coached by so many amazing coaches. So fun fact, when I was younger, I trained at Nadal's academy where he was training.
Yeah.
So not the one he has now. But where he was actually training with his coach.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of training there growing up. I, you know, had some sessions with his coach and I saw the way he coaches. And pretty similar, whether he knew it or not, you know, he had the mental element in there. And I've had some amazing coaches. There's a very well-known known tennis coach in the UK. He actually sadly passed away recently.
Oh.
But he was so known for pushing people past their ceilings, past what they thought their limits were. And I know that sounds a bit grueling, but it's not necessarily, you know, it's just pointing out and giving your heart to someone, you know, so with the best of intentions, just letting them know you can do better. I know you can do better. You can try harder. You can achieve more.
Well, often a lot of us don't know what our physical boundaries are.
No,
either.
Exactly.
You think I'm tired. No, you're not.
Yeah.
You
and
think you're
so
tired,
hard
but you're
to
not.
Know. If you've never gone through the ceiling, how would you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on, you can do another rep. You know, you can do, you know, you can run another mile or whatever.
Yes.
It is all in the mind again.
Yes.
It's all, I'm surprised you haven't seen the OG Boys. I thought you liked football. You said you were a Villa fan.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I like all sports though.
How do you become a Villa fan from Hertfordshire?
Friends and family.
Because isn't that sort of Essex more sort of West Hammy?
It's a little bit of everything, to be honest with you. Like around me, I have a lot of different supporters where I am because it's just outside of London.
Yeah.
So to be honest with you, there's everything all over London. You get everything. But it's a bit odd, like where I live, because it's just outside London. A lot of people have moved out of London, you know, so it's a bit of everything.
So you do other sports?
I did do other sports when I was younger, yeah. I did a couple before I had to dedicate all my time to tennis. One of them was football.
Okay.
Which I loved. I did actually end up dedicating all my time to tennis because I couldn't afford, you know, injuries outside of that.
So. No, if you're going that pathway.
Yeah.
So you must be like the Lionesses now and where they've got to.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're a very strong advocate. Femme pickleball?
Yes, 100%.
But what was the reasoning for that? And being sort of not political, topical, mm-hmm. having just a women-only event, and I tell me why you did it. And I've heard some men, why can't we just have a men-only event? And I was thinking, well, you can, I suppose, if you want to. Why are we being excluded? But I don't know why your reasoning wasn't because you didn't like men. It was an opportunity for women.
Yeah.
Just because I think we need more women in this sport.
I mean, that's so funny to me. I mean, I coach everyone, right? I coach men, women, boys, girls. I coach everyone. And I would never exclude anyone. It's not about exclusion. It's about creating opportunity. So one of the things that I noticed very quickly about meeting players and, you know, meeting lots of people at various tournaments is that the women needed a boost in terms of their mindset, in terms of their confidence. They needed a boost. So from
to the psychology again, isn't it?
Yes. From what I've seen in pickleball, the thing is when men don't realize, you know, because, you know, we're going way back, the way boys are brought up, the way men are brought up, they are most likely to, when they take on a new sport, go all in, give it a go, be competitive, no matter who they're playing with. You know, they go out there, you know, even if they're a bit nervous about it, sometimes actually causes them to be over the top, you know, loud. They get into it. They will go for it.
It's a security blanket, isn't it? Sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's the armor.
Yeah.
Men have armor.
Yes. And they're taught almost that way from their upbringing. Yeah. You know, you just go into
be a man.
You know, things like that. So women don't have that. But men wouldn't know that because they haven't experienced it from a young age. So it's very hard. I get it's very hard to understand something, you know, that you would have no experience of. Whereas women have been brought up, you know, to make way for other people, you know, to be people pleasers, which is a big mindset shift that I deal with in female athletes is that people pleasing and actually putting themselves first as players on the court and playing the way they want to play. And this is what Femme Pickle is about, uplifting women, giving them the confidence, giving them, you know, a really comfortable environment to be in and go and play. Some of them were just there because, you know, some of them hadn't been to an event before, you know, and the all-female event made them feel really comfortable to come out and give it a go. Great, goal achieved. That was amazing.
Tick that box,
Yes, which brings more women into the sport. Yeah. And then we've got all the women that already play and just wanted to be surrounded by all these other amazing women and lift each other up.
Yeah.
You know, it's a chance to, you know, be confident, you know, be who you want to be on the court in that environment where they don't feel, you know, the intimidation necessarily.
Oh, no, I get it. And funny enough, when I play now, I think this is what some mixed doubles is so great at, and it's, you know, mixed doubles and men tennis or mixed doubles in tennis, you know, it is more about, you know, power, men against women. The physiologically you can't compete in that, but I think in pickleball it doesn't matter because what's great to see, well, Thaddeus and Pei beating James and Louis.
I'm so glad you said that because it's so true.
No, but it's balanced. I don't see it when you go on court playing with it's me and a woman. When we have mixed sessions, match up, we do use an app. You know, got two men against the mixed doubles, or got two women against the two men, and whatever.
Some people don't see it that way, though.
No, I know they don't.
Yeah.
But I don't. And I actually, and some men go, oh, she's going to be the weaker player.
Yes.
Oh, well, more for you.
Automatically.
But more for you.
Exactly.
Because, you know, because that's just, but I think that's just, fortunately, it's way a lot of men have been brought up, and, you know, it's way life has been. But I know there's a shift change. But that's why I think pickleball is very leveling in lots of ways, because you can compete against anybody.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't matter who you are.
No.
And what, I mean, part of this, the reason for setting the, doing the podcast was as well, is like, is trying to grow the pickleball community. You know, I've had, I wasn't really going to just do interviews. It's that's all it's been at the moment. I was going to I wanted to be more of a bit of a show, talking about what's going on in different things. But the guests, you've all been wonderful. It's been great to know you. And then, you know, I met Maisie Wise, you know, and she was telling me about her dad, and her dad runs a disabled wheelchair league up north. And I said, oh, I'd love, and I know there's a guy called Andy down here who plays in a wheelchair, and I've seen him at tournaments playing with an able-bodied player.
Yeah.
And you just go, wow. And you know, I'd like to hear their story, you know, and having girls on and guys on and older people, younger people, you know. I had Lauren on last week. Lauren's podcast is coming out shortly, you know, and just knowing his story and completely threw me slightly because he had no sporting background. And I, the way he plays, I think his background, he must be sporty, but he wasn't.
Yeah, and a lot of my players don't actually have a sporting background.
My wife's taken up pickleball. I brought her into, she never played racket sports in her life. She's a very competitive person, always has been netball-wise, but she wasn't a rackets person.
Yeah, you don't have to be.
No, you don't have to be. And she's competitive inside her, which is great. And but she's got a blank canvas to start from.
Yeah.
And so she loves to be coached and loves to learn new things and what's good and what's bad and stuff. And I just think this is what I find about the sport. I think it, you talk about mental stuff. I think it's also brilliant for your mental health because you're focused on the court. Nothing distracts you. You know, when you're in that moment, you can't be thinking about your utility bill, you know, or, you know, those negative things, because everyone
has a break. Yeah.
Everyone has stuff in their life going on.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes you find, you know, had a hard day at work, go play pickleball, and that sort of decompresses you for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Coaching, you learn, and it's an all-round body exercise. I just think it's a fantastic sport. Where do you see, or where would you like it to go? What do you have a vision? Do you have a dream of what you can do as a player, what you can do for pickleball, or where you'd like to see pickleball go in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years?
Yeah, pickleball's just gonna keep creating opportunities. The reason that I've already started the Performance Academy is, and why I keep saying, you know, we need to treat pickleball for what it is. It's a professional sport. There are professionals playing it.
Yeah.
You know, it needs to be shouted from the rooftops a little bit more that there are top players and, you know, we get paid to play. You know, I'm full-time in pickleball. There are opportunities for you, and there's only going to be more and more opportunities. You know, and for with tennis, you know, there's the college opportunity to go out to the US and play college tennis. And it's only a matter of time before that comes for pickleball, because they've already...
But it's economics though as well, isn't it? Money... You know, where's the money going to come from? Because for you to get paid by us, you must get paid. If you're getting paid, you're getting paid by your sponsor at the moment. It's mm-hmm. treating it like a job.
Yeah.
For them, there's got to be a return. Or sometimes they have to be long-term investments because they can't see the rewards yet.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's branding, you know, if you wear, oh, Molly's, you know, the social media side of it's important. Perhaps where is Molly on social media? How many followers she got? If Molly wears somebody's trainers, you know, is that going to sell more trainers? You
know? Yeah.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Is, you know, even women's sport in the UK, you know, the Lionesses did a fantastic job, and you see more of their football matches now. And I love watching their games.
Yeah.
You know, I even have sneaky peeks at netball and that. But I've heard recently, even the Super League, that, you know, two of the teams, so-called best teams in the country, have been closed down. And, you know, the money, it's all about sort of money and that. And that's the bit, I hope pickleball gets that right, you know.
I believe it will. Yeah. I believe it will.
The right people come in.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, I think it's so important that whatever the governance debate is, it's treated with the right respect.
Mm-hmm.
I think the opportunities, like you say, it's a professional sport.
Yeah.
There are opportunities for people to have a career as a professional sports person. And doesn't mean your career at football maybe is over when you're 35, 36. Rugby, you're over when you're 32, 33 maybe. Tennis, there's a core of these guys at 37, 38.
Yeah.
Coming to an end. I know Roger Federer is 41 when he retired, but that's a long career, but that's not often. Yeah. Guys, limit pickleball, you know, because of the way it's set up as well. I mean, the age categories, but
exactly, yeah.
You know, you could be, you know, I know there are other sports like in, I think, snooker as well. They have masters. So you've got, you know, if you're over a certain age, they have their own tournaments. And I think that's what the great thing about what I think the PPL have done this year is actually have that masters now.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I missed the draft to get in. but I put my name forward. But anyway,
next year?
I'll keep pushing. You know, someone said to me, the way the draft works, it's more probably about who people knew, who people who are familiar in the circuit. So the more people come in, people don't know who you are, you're not going to necessarily be picked out.
Come and see me. They won't be able to turn you down. I'll coach you.
Thank you. No, bar me as getting older, I still feel I can. I always wanted to be a professional sportsperson, but life didn't allow that to happen. But I don't see any reason why I can't better at it. But then you get to a certain age in life where you also still have to pay your bills, mm-hmm. and so you have to balance between what you can do, where you can earn your income, and then dedicate time to your passion in your sport.
Yeah.
And that's where you obviously, I think Thaddea is the only full time pro. Or are you full time now?
Yeah,
as well.
I am, yeah,
where you don't have a second job, because I know James has got a job, I know Louis's got a job, and so is Freddie. And you know, it's difficult for them. And I just think, James, how do you stay at the level you are? And he said, it's difficult, really difficult, mm-hmm. you know, because he hasn't got a 9-to-5 job. He's got a full on job. And then he's like, got to find the time to practice, or he's got an abundance of talent and it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Because I've also heard with pickleball, some people say, actually, it's one of those sports that maybe you don't have to practice as much as you might in others.
I mean,
you know, you can go away for a few weeks and come back. Your level hasn't dropped. Whereas something like tennis, people say, if you don't practice every day, you will drop.
Well, you can go and play pickleball no matter what level you are.
Yeah.
So in terms of that, yes, like, you know, if you haven't practiced for 3 weeks, you'll still be able to go and play.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily going to be, you know, the level you were at 3 weeks ago, unless you already have, you know, a lot of people are lucky that come from other sports because they already have that muscle memory.
Yeah.
You know, for someone like me, the Jameses, you know, because we have that core muscle memory, for us, if we go away and then come back, it's still there.
Yeah.
But that's because we've trained it for so long.
Was it 10,000 hours?
Well over. Yes.
No, but isn't that the thing? The muscle memory is based on 10,000
yes.
hours.
Yeah.
And actually 10,000 hours is a lot.
Oh, yes.
It? Years, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. It's a long time. But yeah, so you can go and play, but I wouldn't necessarily, you know, say it would be at like the same level. You know, if you were practicing, the level would be higher.
Yeah. An interesting one. Might have to come and see you. So to lighten things, so... You're a big music fan, I believe. Are you?
I guess.
Well, it was on your Facebook page or somewhere. It said music, big for music, or it said professional this and that. So careful what people write in certain areas. I don't know. Yeah, I saw it said big music. Are you a big music fan?
I mean, yes, I listen to music all the time. Yeah. I mean, if I'm not doing anything, even when I'm doing things, yeah, I'm always listening to music.
Does it help? Does it help you focus?
Yes, I mean, for me, because I take in so much information all the time, having music on allows me to kind of shut out certain things,
right.
Even noises sometimes, but the world around me, because, you know,
it gets a lot. How do you decompress? How do you come down?
So one of the ways I do that, I will wear my headphones a lot. A lot of the time you see me, I will have my headphones on. Luckily for me, I don't know if I just have an approachable manner that doesn't stop people coming up to me, because I wouldn't want it to, but I will have my headphones on a lot of the time.
Is that how you chill out though?
Yes. You know, listening to music is definitely up there. Meditation is always also up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also up there.
Yoga?
Not so much. No. I mean, like, I stretch, but I haven't been to yoga in a long time.
But some of them say it's helped, that sort of helps your core strength, which must be very Well, your core strength in pickleball is really important, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I did Pilates for like 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that helps your game?
Yes. Yeah. It's pretty much, it's like injury prevention.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. It strengthens those small muscles, you know, that you wouldn't
The muscles you didn't, work. Most of us muscles
you wouldn't you know you had.
You don't know you have, and then you find them, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you had any funny moments in your pickleball career to date?
Funny
that
moments?
Things that sort of stick in your mind. Because apparently Louis always gets hit by a ball, I was told. Everyone finds that quite amusing. It doesn't matter wherever Louis goes, he always seems to get hit.
Yeah.
Even if he's not watching.
He's always doing that speed work. Yeah, the paddle just ain't fast enough, apparently.
Fast hands, Louis. He has got very quick hands.
Yes, no, he has. No, I don't really know, to be honest. Not in that sense.
Memories so far, highlights, you know?
I think some of my highlights would be at Nationals, to be honest with you. You know, where I've hit some of my really big shots, some of my, you know, wild shots, and they've come off. So, you know, I'm quite rare. I have a single-handed backhand in me because I had that for when I played tennis.
Roger.
So when that comes out, that's a bit of a highlight for me, you know, when I hit that single-handed winner past people. You know, it's pretty much when I've hit my big shots. Those are the real highlights for me.
That resonates with Freddie. When Freddie was on us, he was a great, he played tennis as well growing up, and he said, like, he'd come off court and he'd lost, and his mum would be like, "Wow, it wasn't good today." And he went, "But did you see the single-handed backhand, mum?" And she's going, "Yeah, well, it won 1 point." But he goes, "Yeah, but that was the bit I really enjoyed."
Oh, I mean, that wasn't really me, to be honest with you. No, I don't.
Are you a good loser?
Yes. Yeah. Like I said, like,
gone.
My personal ego just isn't big enough to kind of cause that in me, like whether I win or lose.
And finally, we've been, oh, it's 6 o'clock. I don't know what time you got to be off. Heroes, mentors, have you had any? Got any? Growing up?
I mean, yes, like so many.
Name a few.
Oh, that's so tough, to be honest with you. Okay. One that people, you know, like a unique one, I would say, that it's a tennis player that I looked at. She was called Marion Bartoli. Mm-hmm. And growing up, I looked at her and I was just in complete awe of her because she
Italian?
Was... I'm not 100% sure, actually. But she was so unique. She went against the grain. She didn't have coaching growing up. It was her and her dad the whole way through. She did what she wanted to do. She did what she believed in. She had two-handed both sides. And she was ridiculed a lot for her weight, for her fitness. But I remember an interview she did before she won Wimbledon and then afterwards. And they question her weight all the time as a woman, you know, it comes up. And she said, I'm a small player. I play the way I play and I need all the power that I can get behind my shots. And that's why I will continue to do the way, you know, play the way that I play. So don't question me, pretty much. And she went on to win Wimbledon and she said, see, and you know, people... Mm.
Most people, that would be the pinnacle of their career, winning Wimbledon, isn't it?
I mean, exactly. It was. And all those people, you know, that were criticizing her and thinking, you know, she's never going to get anywhere. She's never going to be a winner. She's never going to be a, you know, Wimbledon champion. How could she be? She's not like the rest.
Yeah.
And she said, watch me. And so, and that has stuck with me like my entire life. And I would just, I'm still in awe of her for doing that. And that sticks with me.
Oh, good for you. I was sort of an interview with Kyrgios and Djokovic, and Djokovic said, "Give me a year on my diet, my regime, you'll win the Wimbledon." And Kyrgios, nah, interesting, because he is his own player. I mean, they say he's the most talented tennis player out there, but just there is something going on up here that just stops him winning things, isn't it?
I think
you know, just I don't know whether it's the effort. It has to, but all of these things have to come from within, haven't they?
Yeah.
Well, I think we've covered most things.
Yeah.
I think it's I love all the psychology stuff. It's great. I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
We're going up to the Open, playing on the Sunday and the Monday. Don't know if you guys will be up there then.
On the Sunday, yeah.
Yeah. So see you up there.
Yeah.
Wish you all the best.
And you.
Come back with medals. We'll try. Mixed doubles 3.5 over 50s or whatever it is. Nice to meet you, Molly. Thank you.
Thank you.